much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in, and a very happy Thursday to you. Well, if you listen often enough, you know we've got a few guests that we bring back every single month because they're your favorites, and one of your favorites is Dr. Troy. In fact, in between Dr. Troy's visits, I get emails from you saying, when's he coming back next? Well, it's another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. I will say, the phone lines are open, but Dr. Troy and I are going to have a chat at first. So if you don't mind sitting on hold, but you kind of want to be first in line, on your mark, get set, go. You can call 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. You can also email your question, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Couple quick announcements. Want you to know this amazing Christian Writers Conference we're hosting this summer. We've crossed over the 500 mark. We've got about 510 people registered, 2 months left to go. My prayer and goal is that we would see 700 there, so it won't be complete unless you join us. So if you've got a dream of getting published or you're just even curious about the writing journey, check us out. We've even built a website around this event, NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. We've assembled an A-list faculty of editors, experts, agents to answer your questions. Liz Curtis Higgs is our keynote. Mark Allen is our worship leader. We are going to have an epic day. It's Saturday, July 15th. I pray you'll mark your calendar, spend the $150. Really, you're getting an amazing deal for what we've planned for you that day. So love to have you join us. NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. All right, let me tell you about my guests. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Troy Spurl is CEO and founder of Synapse, a center for health and healing. He travels extensively, conducting seminars on disease prevention and healing through a faith-filled, healthy lifestyle. His mission is to impact the well-being of people around the world by providing solutions to complicated life issues and to create sanctuaries that promote the restoration and perpetuation of health, happiness, and prosperity. Dr. Troy's company is located in Eagan, Minnesota. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Troy.
Happy birthday!
But I'm bumching, so we pulled a fast one on you, Dr. Troy. Sorry, now welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So here's the deal, friends. Yesterday was Dr. Troy's birthday. So as you call in and write in with your questions, I want you just to say a word of thanks to him for what he's meant to you, because he just shows up every month and he invests in us and he cares so deeply about our well-being and our health. So I just want you to give him a word of thanks and a word of encouragement if you've got one. So, all right, Doc, sorry about that. Couldn't help ourselves. We love to start out with a passage of scripture. I'm wondering if you've got a verse that you'd love to share with us.
From Philippians. Philippians 2, verse 3 and 4. Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others.
Hmm. Talk about that one.
Well, it's just wisdom. And a lot of us have a heart to help others and to serve others. And for me, when it comes to health and living healthy, there's a big component of this. You want to teach other people how to be healthy. You yourself want to be healthy. But one of the things that I've looked at with people and with truths that we see both biblically in Scripture and within the healthcare system is there's a dichotomy. There are opposing ideas that actually do blend together.
We'd be willing to let them blend
you
together.
You have to be willing to let them blend together. And so I'm hoping really to talk about what that dichotomy actually looks like in your daily life to help get rid of some of the confusion, because you'll look at different aspects of the Bible and there may be opposing verses where they, by all appearances, they look to be opposing, but they're actually part of the same conversation. And understanding how that can happen and how that can be, you have to get a complete 4D picture of the Bible. You got to get a complete picture of the three dimensions we live in, but how that actually plays out over time and the context of everything. And it's true for the human body at the same time. We really need to get a comprehension of how you're doing. And we'll be talking about some habits today, and a habit that may have served you early in life actually is now a bad habit that doesn't serve you. And I want to bring that into context, really dive into it, because I think will help serve a lot of people in their health.
Hmm. Well, I had lunch with a couple of very dear friends, both of which have family members who are seeing you now too, which I'm thrilled about. But I let them know that I had kind of a light bulb moment. We have a nutritionist on every other month, and her name is Laura Harris-Smith, and she wrote the 30-Day Faith Detox. And she made a point in there that was such a light bulb moment for me, because there's so much controversy even around healing, right? And so she noticed in Corinthians where it talked about gifts that were handed to the church, and one was miracles and another was healing, and there were others. And she's like, why are these two separate? And so she did kind of a Greek Hebrew dive on these two words. And the healing is a sudden bodily phenomenon. It's just a miracle. And sometimes you see those, right? But she said the healing is a process. And so someone with a quote unquote gift of healing has a divine discernment about what a person needs to, and the process is a process. The healing is a healing process. And that was a light bulb moment for me. One, right away I thought of you, because I do feel like God has given you kind of an otherworldly sense and a bigger picture of, if we could all play together nice, we would really get somewhere. But for us as patients, that we would have some patience and say, I have some personal responsibility here. I need some teachability. I got to be willing to make some adjustments. And not to minimize that if you get a healing and not a miracle, isn't that still a miracle? And I just wanted to throw that out to you, because I thought that helps us show up in a whole different way.
Yeah, it really is the same thing. The only difference is time.
Wow.
And again,
wow,
that's
word.
Yeah, because it starts... a miracle happens fairly instantaneously. And guess what? We would all request that mostly. But
it doesn't require change on our part.
It doesn't
though.
Require change. Yeah. And so I think a healing is actually more valuable than a miracle because of the time and the lesson learned. And one of the things I've really found is that really people go through pain. It's pain for a purpose. It really is. Where what comes out of that, people really like who they are after they come through it more than before. Mm. And we generally, as we get torn down to build up and to grow, that growth comes from the pain and the whole process.
Right.
And so pain with a purpose is very, very important and very relevant to what we're going to be talking about today.
Wow, fantastic. Well, I see some calls coming in, but I want to give you a chance to talk about when a good habit becomes a bad habit. I feel like it plays exactly into this conversation, because things you might even think you're doing, you think they're good for you, but they're actually contributing to your weakness. So speak to that whole idea.
Yeah, we're going to use probably one of the most common ones I see. And a lot of this particular habit, being supportive of others, it comes from the verse that we spoke on. A lot of people will actually like to support others. They have a heart to support others. And that can be a strength of theirs. That can be something that they get value out of as well, supporting others. But the reality is you can support and support and support, and then you can start to over-support, and you can become self-sacrificing. You can become a martyr or a victim. And then all of a sudden you find yourself in this crazy little scenario of, wait a second, I don't feel good about supporting anymore. I'm starting to build resentment.
Mm.
And people can become very, very sick if you don't keep that into balance. And so the other side of that is how we support other people. Just because we're supporting and we're a good supporter, eventually there should be discernment there of when that supporting becomes enabling. And some people become so nice and so supportive that they don't serve the other person anymore. And that can become problematic. And so we
they're
see
diminishing
a lot of
themselves and the other person. You know,
yes.
I always feel like there's like a grace space where there's a grace space where I can give a lot. But as soon as I, you know, your response is really what tempers my giving. Do you know what I'm saying? If I give this and you don't respond a certain way, you're out of the grace space.
Yes.
You know, if you can give with no strings attached, you're still in the space. But if it's suddenly they better be grateful and they better respond this way, then do everybody a favor and get back in your space.
That's exactly right.
I say that with great love. But yes. You know what I mean?
It came across that way.
Thank you. Well, let's grab Jim. He's checking in from South Dakota. He's got a question for you. And then we can kind of continue to intermingle this idea of when good habits can become bad habits. 877-933-2484. Hey, Jim, you're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Okay, here I am.
Hey. What's
Hi,
your
Jim.
Question for Dr. Troy today?
Well, I have a long-standing problem with insomnia. In fact, this summer will be getting 39 years, and I'm dead on my feet, and I know exactly what caused it. All those years ago, I had a minor case of PAT, paroxysmal atrial tachycardia, and I was way, way overdosed on medication for it, among them Inderal, Chlorgard, Verapamil, Tenormin, Cardizem. In fact, at one time, the doctor had me taking needlessly 13 pills a day. Well, needless to say, I found out on my own doing a little research that beta blockers, which were some of those drugs were, are a good cause of insomnia. They contribute to it. But here I am, nearly 39 years later, and I don't take those meds anymore, but I still cannot sleep.
Yeah, there are a lot of different variables here. So whenever we see something like that, there's a couple ways that we want to think about it. Number one, any type of excessively traumatic or stressful event can be pretty challenging to the system. And it doesn't matter if that stress is a mental stress or a chemical stress. So if it's a chemical stress that overloaded the system and there's some form of dysfunction with how you're able to detoxify or metabolize your the chemistry of your body, that can affect the ability to sleep deeply. There's a big difference here, though. Is there a challenge in getting to sleep or staying asleep or both? That'll kind of help us direct it in a certain direction. Now, with that type of end result, there's an area of the brain, the brainstem, that keeps our vital organs alive, and it becomes very, very important. If it's trouble staying asleep, the most common thing I see after some type of liver or kidney scenario, or even with a heart to begin with, is a brainstem neurologic condition where the airway actually becomes weakened. And we see this pretty constantly with people who've had some type of stressor, and they make dental devices and other scenarios to help strengthen that airway. But a neurologic approach would help with strengthening the nerves that fire to the airway to keep that open while you're sleeping. If it's trouble getting to sleep, then that's generally more of a hormone and a chemistry issue with your adrenal glands and your serotonin. And fixing the adrenals, the digestive system, and the liver system generally is what's in store there.
And Dr. Troy has a lot of hope for people who battle sleep disorders. So don't give up hope. Keep seeking answers until you get them. Talking to Dr. Troy today, it's Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Phone lines are open if you've got a question. Plus, we've got lots and lots of emails or past questions that we didn't get to from last month. So we don't have a shortage of questions. But if you want to get on the air with Dr. Troy, now's the time to call. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. And we will be back in a minute.
He started something good.
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is The Promise. Every single month, we get Dr. Troy on, and we call it Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. If you've got questions, we're going to try to answer them. And notice I include myself. We're going to try to answer them because I'm a legend in my own mind. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. So we've got an anonymous listener who emailed in, Doc, and writes this. I'm a 62-year-old female. I have an extensive workup with no cause found for overwhelming fatigue. I walk to obtain needed exercise, but then certainly suffer from exhaustion at least for the next 24 to 36 hours. Do you have any ideas or suggestions for care? Appreciate any help you could provide. Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like the adrenals are involved, and we need to take a look and make sure that the adrenals are doing okay. But there's a few other things that kind of step in front of that. We have to make sure you're not anemic. Number one, your hemoglobin should be very balanced. We like to see that over 13 for ideal levels. We want to make sure your blood sugar is balanced. So as long as you're getting blood sugar and oxygen through good hemoglobin and balanced blood sugar, then it's really about the adrenal glands. And a lot of times, as we go through menopause, women go through menopause.
Well, if I'm going to include myself in being a doctor, you might as well.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
As you go through menopause, the ovaries stop producing estrogen and the hormones, and that job now goes to the adrenal glands. That's your stress gland. Stress gland that also happens to regulate or be involved with stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline, and insulin has an effect on that. So all of a sudden, this extra load goes to the adrenal glands. So to support the adrenal glands, some doctors will prescribe estrogen, especially if you had hot flashes or anything like that. Then your adrenal glands don't have to produce any extra estrogen. However, you can also support the adrenal glands. Sometimes the hormone DHEA helps. Sometimes B vitamins help, B5, B6 in particular. And many times eating more protein. But then, again, as we age, our digestive system becomes less likely to break down the protein. So a lot of people won't eat protein like they used to because it sits heavy in them. In that case, just taking a little bit extra hydrochloric acid or enzymes with each meal can break down the protein and support the adrenal glands. And a lot of people will also be told to cut out salt during, if their blood pressure is high or anything like that. But one of the challenges is our adrenal glands require proper balances of sodium and chloride as well. So managing the adrenal glands, there's a lot of things that help positively support the adrenal glands. Good deep sleep is also very important. But generally speaking, if it's not anemia, not blood sugar regulation, then you really want to look at properly supporting the adrenal glands to build that endurance.
And you can actually do a saliva test to see what those adrenals are looking like, right?
Yes, you can do a saliva test. And as long as the other things in the cardiac arena have been ruled out, the saliva test will tell you at what phase the adrenal glands are.
Oh, excellent. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Dale's checking in from North Dakota with a question for you today. Thanks for joining us. Dale, you're on the air.
Hi, Susie. It's not a question. This is going to be directed to you personally. I have a friend. His name is Mitch, and he was a pastor. He isn't a pastor anymore, and he's really, really battling with some chronic diseases. And many nights, during the middle of the night, I'll wake up, and his name and your name comes to mind. Mm. And be encouraged. I've been praying for you.
Wow. Thank you so much.
So, well, it's not a pat on my back. I'm dealing with some health issues, too. And Scripture tells us to pray one for another.
Yeah.
And there's many nights I wake up 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I just Susie Larson just touch her.
No. Well, Dale, let me return the favor.
The Spirit of God just come upon you and give you peace. And I pray many times for mercy for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it so very much. To be perfectly honest, I'm moving forward. I know that I am. There's days I have setbacks that last several days, and then I pop forward again. So I'm on my way, but I'm going to pray for you. Can I do that real quick?
That would be fine. Mm.
Well, Lord, I thank you for Dale, and I thank you for his heart to pray for brothers and sisters who are struggling. And I pray, God, you would pour out your Spirit on him, and I pray you'd heal him and strengthen him. But I also ask you to continue to grow his prayer life, that more and more he would get downloads from you and know who he's supposed to pray for and when he's supposed to pray for them. Thank you for his ministry and for his heart. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you, Dale. Bless you for that call. 877-933-2484. We've got Ashley checking in from Ham Lake. Ashley, you're on the air with Dr. Troy. Hey.
Hi, Dr. Troy. I have a son that's 4 years old, and at 9 months old, he fell down 12 wooden stairs, and ever since then, he's had really bad severe food allergies, environmental allergies, to the point where he gets severe hives, rashes, and he can't stop itching. We've been to allergists, and nothing has helped, and they all turn us away.
Okay, well, there's, again, a couple of variables here. If it is from the fall, then we're talking about a physical scenario. And the one thing I always try and teach people is that there's always a mental, chemical, and physical component as far as what we can work with. And so a physical trauma can induce problems with our digestive system. For example, we now know definitively that a concussion can cause leaky gut within 24 hours. And so if there was a concussion or if there was some level of insult to the cranial structure, then we probably have a compromised immune system. Now, someone who does cranial sacral therapy can help quite a bit with the physical cranial nerves and muscles and bones. It's a gentle technique, works wonderful with kids, and they respond very quickly. If there is no cranial deficiencies there currently, then he's come through that part of it, but there still could be the digestive scenario. So a leaky gut test can be done. It's a blood draw. Cyrex Labs does a great job of analyzing for leaky gut, and if there is leaky gut, that would need to be fixed. It would take a little bit of diet change. And then one of the things, when we start to see leaky gut a scenario at that age, there becomes almost a battle inside the body between a histamine and methylation. Methylation is the ability to detoxify. So the immune system becomes more and more engaged on environmental triggers, if you will, and more allergies can pop up. So there's a lot of variables here, but it sounds like the digestive system and cranial system need to be assessed more from a leaky gut and cranial sacral therapy, and then kind of go from there. Most likely, as he gets a little older, it'll be important to support the methylation processes as well.
I seem to remember Dr. Mark saying one of the times when I was at your clinic that maybe I got this wrong, so if it's wrong, it's me, but that 100% of the time when you have a significant head injury, you're going to see some gut issue connected.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So we see it all the time, mm-hmm. and it can happen instantaneously, wow. or it could take weeks and months if there's not a recovery. And I know we many of us grew up in an era where we didn't wear helmets to cross the street, or you know, we just are a little different now. But the reality is, we do see these really significant effects. And you have to think of it like this: when there's trauma, there's fight or flight, and anytime you have fight or flight, it inhibits rest and digest. So it inhibits your ability to get deep restorative sleep and to digest food properly.
Oh, so interesting. All right. A good friend of mine recently received this diagnosis, multilevel degenerative cervical spondylosis. I'm going to say it again, multilevel degenerative cervical spondylosis. Am I saying that right? And what is it?
Well, it's basically degeneration just means speeding up of the aging process, and the bones have started to degenerate. And spondylosis means that the bones are sliding forward or backwards and they're not aligning properly. So generally speaking, the way we look at this is to identify if it came from trauma or accident or slowly over time. Generally speaking, slowly over time indicates that something else is setting up the nerves to affect the muscles to not stabilize it properly.
We're going to pick that up when we get back. Boy, where's the time gone? So we're at a hard break here. Keep the calls coming if you've got them. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute.
And anything but usual. We know that there's no such thing as impossible.
Hey, sorry, that song needs a hey. I'm Susie Larson. This is The Promise. So glad you tuned in today. This is one of our favorite featured shows. It's Dr. Troy, Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Love to hear from you if you've got health and healing questions. And if you're shy about getting on the air, you can let Aaron know your question. He'll write it on the board for me. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Rebecca from St. Paul, I see you. We're going to get your call in just a moment, but I asked you the question probably too close to the break, so I want you to be able to pick it up if you need to, Doc. This question, a friend received this diagnosis recently, multilevel degenerative cervical spondylosis. And in this situation, some of the symptoms are pretty scary with memory loss and different things, and discerned that the spinal cord is kind of flattened in certain spots because of this degeneration. What do you say?
Yeah, so you have to look at everything a little more holistically as far as the whole body. If the spinal cord is flattened, we'll generally see symptoms in the arms and legs. There can be a couple other body type scenarios, but we see pain shooting down the arms. That's a traditional disc challenge. But with spondylosis like that and cervical degeneration, it's almost like you're losing the space that the nerves have to operate freely. And those bones that have shifted because the muscles all around them, front, back, left, right, are not supporting it equally. And it's the nerves that fire to those muscles. So what is causing the nerves to fire to those muscles? If it happens slowly over time, that's always a reflex from somewhere internally. And so identifying the root cause, which may have been around for 20, 30 years, is very, very important. The most common reflexes that we see that cause that type of problem are digestive and sinus. So a low-grade sinus infection, one like Marcon's, that can go on for years. You don't even know it's there. It's an antibiotic-resistant bacteria that is not causing a fever, not causing sinus infection, but is there in larger quantities that increases the mucosal production, will tighten the neck muscles. A posture where you're looking down at a keyboard, a phone, for hours at a day, that posture can have the neck muscles go forward as well, and you've got an imbalance there too. So you've got physical and chemical causes for this dysfunction. You identify that and make the changes, and then you generally have to see, is it worth it to open up the can of worms to start to get things back in place to where they're supposed to go? If the answer is yes, then traction is generally used. Traction helps to gently and slowly pull the neck and stretch it in a manner that's therapeutic, and then you can start to put the bones back where they're supposed to go and stimulate and exercise and balance the nerves and muscles.
One of these times we're going to have Dr. Troy do a Facebook Live example of wall angels, because that's an important exercise too.
Yeah.
No matter what your issue is.
Yes, exactly. And
if you've got a mother-in-law issue, you do wall angels.
That's right.
I'm just kidding.
My favorite.
Mine too. 877-933-2484. All right. Rebecca is checking in from St. Paul. Been so patient. Hey, Rebecca, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi. My question is regarding my baby. So he had a lip and a tongue tie that was like impacting his ability to nurse properly or take a bottle even, and that led to some problems with weight gain. And he had a laser procedure called a frenectomy where they basically remove the pieces of skin. And they also identified that his stomach is really weak, and we were it was recommended for us to go to a craniosacral specialist, which is, yeah, I'd never heard of that before. And I'm wondering, like, what would be the connection there with that? It just seems so, like, I wasn't understanding how that relates to the particular problem he's having. And then the reason I'm asking is wondering how much I should prioritize it, because it's not covered by my insurance. Mm. And I just didn't know, like, since I don't understand what the connection is, I'm wondering, like, are there later
ramifications,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
Or not.
So. Yeah, it's actually a very good question. Clarification is extremely important. So I would say that it is potentially very important. Having at least the cranials assessed, if there's any dysfunction there, the reason why it's important is because at this point you want to strengthen the muscles, strengthen the reflex. The only way to strengthen the reflex is to stimulate it. So if we switch it up a little bit and we're going to exercise your right bicep, we'll have you do bicep curls over and over and over again, and it'll get stronger slowly but surely. As the baby's brain is developing, it takes and needs two things. It needs the proper fuel supply, which is coming from the food, oxygen and sugar, and then it needs to be stimulated. So practice makes perfect, first and foremost. So I'd also recommend going to a nursing professional where they can give you some tips, and you can actually practice nursing and strengthening that reflex. So that should be covered with insurance to a certain degree. And the cranial sacral is actually pretty important. The reason why they recommend that is because as you actually work on the cranial nerves and the muscles of the cranium, it'll stimulate the same nerves in a different way. And so and if there's something really dysfunctional there with the craniums, then the baby will not be getting stimulus to the proper area as efficiently. And once they reset the cranials, every breath that the baby takes actually stimulates the nerves. So you'll see the reflex start to strengthen faster. So there is a lot of value there. My two recommendations would be to highly prioritize the cranials and getting good instruction from a nursing professional.
Excellent. 877-933-2484. Kristen's checking in from Stephen, Minnesota. Kristen, thanks for holding. You're on the air. Hey, Kristen.
Hi.
Hey, what's your question today?
Yeah, I just had a question about my Hashimoto's. So there's just a couple of things that I'm wondering about. Just a little history. I did take some tests. I found out that I have leaky gut. I took a wheat zoomer test that said that I'm high risk for gluten intolerant, corn, milk, and also I'm estrogen dominant. And then I took another test. It was a stool test that came back. And so I'm wondering if the overgrowth, it says pseudonomous and staphylococcus, if that's related to SIBO. And then the other thing was I was working with a holistic practitioner, and he said that I had parasites, but nothing came up on the stool test. However, I had found these things when I went to the bathroom, and I brought it into him, and he said that they look like rope worms. So that didn't show up, and so my question is, what would your protocol be for getting rid of those, and should I be taking another test to see if the parasites would show up on the test again? And then the other thing is, if I do have SIBO, do you recommend going on antibiotics, and do you recommend doing like a low FODMAP diet, low sugar, stuff like that?
All right, thanks.
Okay, loaded. Love this question, and I love all the information you have about this. So the first thing is, with leaky gut, we pretty much, you can take to the bank, gluten's going to be a problem. The number one reaction or cross-linked reaction with gluten is dairy. So gluten, corn, and dairy are not a surprise. You have to fix the leaky gut first. So that becomes priority number one. It's the only thing that kind of trumps taking care of the infection. Now, the reason is the infection can become very detrimental and cause leaky gut again. So many times I'll actually do it at the same time. And the Pseudomonas and the staph doesn't necessarily mean you have SIBO. SIBO is more like your good bacteria in the wrong location. So the only way to definitively know if you have SIBO is to do a breath test and check for SIBO that way. If you have ileocecal valve dysfunction, then it's highly likely you have SIBO. Or if you have low stomach acid, then it's highly likely you have SIBO. So you want to check check for the SIBO directly. Low FODMAPs is absolutely necessary to treat the SIBO. So you have to do the low FODMAPs, and I wouldn't do antibiotics. In fact, antibiotics were found to only be, I may not get this percentage right because I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but 47% effective in treating SIBO versus FODMAPs diet with the natural botanicals. So the natural botanicals and FODMAPs combination was in the upper 80% for effectiveness against SIBO. And Xifaxan is the main antibiotic that's used, and that's the one that was tested for SIBO, and it is very expensive and not quite as effective. So we will use that every once in a while, but we really get the results with SIBO with the botanicals and the low FODMAPs. Hmm. Now, with the stool test, parasites are, it's so hit or miss. I say save your money, because a lot of times they don't pay for those lab tests, and just do a parasite cleanse, which again is usually in the same realm. Almost the same herbal botanicals are used for parasites as are used for SIBO. So there's some cross reference there. If you're working with someone, sounds like someone's right on top of it as far as all their information, they will have something for the parasites. And I'll generally go after the SIBO, fix the leaky gut, and then do a second phase parasite cleanse on top of that. And you'll know, because after a couple weeks or months, you'll start to see less reaction to the foods that you're consuming, and your digestive system will start to normalize. Sleep will improve.
Wow. Thank you for that call, for being so, really, she just was very abreast of everything.
Yes.
She's been the gamut. Okay, we've got an anonymous caller. We'll take this one more before our third quarter break here. Thanks, friend, for holding. You're on the air. You got a question for Dr. Troy?
Sure. Thanks, you guys. I have a daughter in her mid-20s, and she has started gradually having her bilirubin go up ever so slightly over the last couple of years. And right now it's a little over 3, but she feels like her eyes, the sclera has turned just a little slight yellow, and skin tone. She does have olive skin tone anyways, but she really feels she's even a comment, people comment on it. She's had tons and tons of testing done. Everything is negative. She also complains about left side of her body from her chest up with inflammation and sinus issues, and like her neck feels like they're swelling. She's seen ENT. They say there's nothing wrong. She's just got some inflammation. Any ideas where to go or what to do from here?
Yeah, that's a tough one. There are some scenarios that you'd want to check. So if she's olive skinned anyway and she's having some challenges, generally speaking, we want to make sure that her liver system's doing well and that her blood system's doing well. If they've ruled out the severe stuff, the spleen disorders, the blood disorders, then really we have to look for a functional cause for this. Now, there are different scenarios that can set this up. Hormone imbalances, if she is taking any type of hormone for whether it be for balancing of estrogen, for menstrual cycle, or for skin, then that can actually start to cause this challenge. If she has significant food reactions, that can actually do it too in a secondary scenario. So you want to look for different things that can cause inflammation that might overload the liver system as well. And sometimes if they're fair-skinned, it can actually be a liver scenario where they actually need more sunlight, just like with babies when their bilirubin's high, you put them in the sun for a little bit. But with olive skin, we're really looking at other scenarios. I need a little bit more information to be able to know what direction to go. But generally speaking, I would look at methylation, number one, which is B vitamins to help with the red blood cells. And sometimes they're just a little bit high. B12 deficiency is one of the most common causes that can set up the red blood cell scenario, which then sets up the bilirubin, and can folic acid deficiency and having a genetic, it's called methyl tetrahydrofolic reductase enzyme deficiency. And that can actually do the same thing where you actually have a decrease in methylation for the liver, and the consequence can back up and cause the problems with the bilirubin.
Thanks so much for that call. And we're going to pause here and take a break. When we come back, anonymous friend called, didn't stay on the line, Doc, but wanted to know, I think it was a couple months ago, you mentioned a book. She says it was called something like Nourishing Nutrition. Does that ring a bell? You want to say it?
Yes, if I can remember it. It's, it's Nourishing Nutrition.
We'll look it
traditions,
up.
Yeah.
Anyway, she wanted to know about that book. We'll do a little search and see if we can find it for you. Keep the calls coming. Deb, I see you from Sioux Falls. We'll catch you on the other side. 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. Back in a minute. Wow, really glad you tuned in today. I want you to have hope. If you're battling in your health, there are adjustments you can make. There are answers to your questions, and God really wants you well. That's why we do this show every single month with Dr. Troy, Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Email if you've got questions, or you can call. So email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com, or call 877-933-2484. So that dear listener wanted to know about a book that you mentioned, I think, a month or two ago. You got that title for us now.
Yes, Nourishing Traditions, and it's by Sally Fallon.
Nourishing Traditions. Why did you like that book so much?
It explains where our food comes from, our whole food, our real food, and then some of the history behind it, and then some of the natural healing that occurs with it.
Awesome.
And generally speaking, if God made it, it's good. If we've touched it or changed it, be careful.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, 877-933-2484. We've got Deb checking in from Sioux Falls. Hey, Deb, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I've had chronic neck problems, and before in the past, I've had problems where my arm would go numb or my hands would go numb, and I've had chiropractic work done and some PT work, stretching and different things, but recently it's gotten really bad again where now when I go to bed at night and I lay on my back or even on my side, my arms will go numb and tingly. Even just in my normal stance, just during the day working or whatever, if I reach for something or put my hands above my head, that arm will go numb. Sitting in a car driving, I have a hard time getting in a good position where my arms won't go numb. So putting my head back, immediately my arms go numb. So Is it a neurological problem? Is it a muscular problem? I'm getting no relief with chiropractic right now. So I don't exactly know where I should begin to look or...
Yeah, if it's both arms, then generally speaking, we're looking at more of a, it could be neurologic, but it sounds more like a thoracic outlet syndrome type scenario where you're getting either nerve or the blood vessels compromised. It does sound like a bit of a blend between the two, neurologic and the vascular. But generally speaking, the one common denominator there is muscle tension. And if your muscle tone is too high, you're going to slowly start losing range of motion or as far as how can I move to have normal function. So as the muscles of the neck get tighter and tighter, as the muscles of the shoulders get tighter and tighter, you get less range of motion without any compromise to the nerves or the blood vessels. So it's really about identifying that. If PT and chiropractic aren't working and they're finding the right areas, if the muscles aren't releasing, then we have to identify what is increasing the tone of the muscles. Just like if you have a stressful day, mental stress can do that. Hidden infection and food reaction are the other two scenarios that can also do that. It's very, very important to identify what is the source of causing the increased tension. All muscles should be able to relax at a certain point. If there's nerve compromise, meaning the nerve has, there's a disc bulge affecting the nerve, there'll be pain, usually pain and weakness associated with that. If there's lymphatic congestion can come from, again, hidden infection or too much sugar in your diet. And so sugar can become a complicating scenario where you have swelling in and around the neck muscle areas as well. So those are the most common scenarios we see that increase swelling and muscle tension that can cause the symptoms you're talking about.
Thank you so much, Deb, for that call. We're going to squeeze one more call in before the top of the hour here. Jessica's checking in from Eden Prairie. Hey, Jessica, you're on with Dr. Troy.
Hi, thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just had a quick follow-up regarding the woman who was just asking about SIBO and antibiotics versus FODMAP diet. I heard Dr. Troy say that often the cure will be the FODMAP diet, and I just have never heard the word cure used with SIBO before. In fact, I've been kind of told that it's going to be an ongoing problem and that you just have to adhere to the FODMAP diet pretty much indefinitely. And I was curious if he has any further information on that or if there's any other advice he can give, because anytime I go off FODMAP, it is back to where I started.
Wow. Good question.
Yeah, I'm glad you called in. I'm not sure if I said cure. I don't think I don't usually use that word, but having said that, generally speaking, you can SIBO will come and go. But if you regulate two main areas, if you can regulate the ileocecal valve and keep that functioning properly, then that decreases the chances and likelihood of SIBO coming back. Also, if you can keep balanced your hydrochloric acid, your stomach acid, and there's many factors to that, managing stress, keeping the nerves that actually supply energy to the digestive system, keeping those stimulated, then you can keep the amount of hydrochloric acid balance. If you manage the stomach acid and the ileocecal valve, it decreases the likelihood of SIBO coming back. And we do have patients that where it comes and goes, but we've also currently got patients that have gone years and we haven't had it come back at all yet. So those, for what, how we look at it, those are the two scenarios that if you get them under control, really decreases the likelihood of it coming back.
Boy, thanks for that. This anonymous caller said, I think we can squeeze this in even with just a couple minutes left. I get lots of cramps in my calves and my feet, mostly when I'm sleeping and or lying down. What can I do?
If the electrolytes are balanced, if it's that part of it's doing well, almost always this is also an adrenal problem because the calves will tighten with adrenal stress, and it's all about getting that circulation. Now, sometimes that can actually be a low back problem. It can be a mattress problem. But you want to make sure the muscle behind your knees is not tight. If it's really tight or sensitive, the gastroc muscle right where it inserts, if it's really tight or sensitive, that can be stretched out, and you want to manage your adrenal glands. Now, at nighttime, you can drop into a low blood sugar state, and that can actually cause the cramping as well. So there's a bunch of variables here, but if there's a low blood sugar problem, manage that. You can even take have an apple or something that's low glycemic before bed, and that'll help through the night. You want to make sure you stay hydrated because dehydration can also set up the cramping. And you want to make sure that there's no muscle tension or spasms in the lower leg. That can be corrected with massage, with different therapies, myofascial therapy, exercise. So there's a bunch of variables there. But as long as the blood flow and lymph flow are good, then really it's about managing the adrenal glands and the electrolytes, the kidneys and the adrenals.
I heard somewhere that leg cramps can also be attributed to potassium, calcium.
Yep, that's the electrolytes. Those are the ones that you want to make sure that they're doing okay to, so that you don't have that muscle firing at the wrong time.
You know that that pose or whatever when you're laying up against the wall, you're against the wall, your legs are up, legs up a wall, actually, I think it's called. I don't know where they got that name. But anyway, I heard that's actually really good to do before you sleep just to have the return. Is that?
Yeah. That helps with the lymphatic drainage. So even if you don't go right up against the wall and just elevate your legs above your head on the couch with pillows or on the bed with pillows, 10, 15 minutes before bed, that helps quite a bit.
Another thing that really helped, I mean, I probably my whole adult life have battled sleep issues. And since I've been seeing Dr. Troy and just making some super simple adjustments, I'm sleeping and actually dreaming. I never thought that was possible. But one of the things, I think I got it from you and I read it somewhere else as well, but just an 8-count deep breath in, hold it for 8 counts, 16-count release. Go through that cycle as many times as you can, but it slows your heart rate down. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah, it slows your heart rate down, increases your oxygen, and blows off the carbon dioxide. So you're literally, carbon dioxide gets turned into an acid in our body. And so when you regulate your breathing and get that really balanced before going to bed, it's a little mini detox before going to bed.
Fantastic.
And it'll actually increase circulation.
So imagine if you do legs up a wall and deep breaths, you're going to be comatose for most of the night. I'm just kidding you. Wow. Well, this has been awesome. And we've got one more hour left with Dr. Troy. And then his kids who are in studio are taking him to the Twins game. So how nice of him to stop by. How nice of them to stop by and listen to their dad's ever-flowing wisdom. I mean, they're hanging on every word you say.
Yeah.
So, hour two is coming up next. We've got a bunch of emails. Keep the calls coming. If you've got a question for Dr. Troy, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. And Cheryl, you wrote in and wanted me to ask this question somewhere between 3:45 and 5 o'clock. So we're going to get it at 5:04. So hopefully you can stay in your car and we'll be able to answer your question next. Don't go away. Hour two is up next.